Rabbi Yaakov Blau, Parshas Truma. Parshas here.
Thank you, small crowd, but thank you to Rabbi Blau. And without further ado.
At one point, thank you to the crowd for coming. We come and got a cold night for Truma, like a double combination.
I'll move this back.
Oh, hello. Right.
I'm moving it back.
There you go.
I'm just going to wait until it's all safe.
We're good? All right, very good then. Okay, so tonight's year, we broke up into three parts. There is a flow between them, but since it's Truma, I hope people feel a bit understanding of this entire argument set together. Okay, it's going to be two parts of the Truma, and then something even Ezra says over here is very parallel to a day he had somewhere else, and I will look at that. That way, it's both a day famous even Ezra someplace else, and also there's about Truma for 45 minutes. Okay, the starting off is supplies of God for the Mishkan. Most of the supplies are pretty straightforward. They got gold, silver, etc., etc. Two of them are a little bit weird. Okay, the more famous weird ones, Atzei Shittim. We'll get to that in a second. But first, he has Oros Tachashim. Now, the term Tachashim only doesn't appear that often in Tanakh. The question is, what is it? Let's look at the Rashi and Ibn Ezra in that one. Just quickly, it's interesting that, a little bit of background, Ibn Ezra rewrote his commentary many times. So, Hamstrom and Shemosh have two versions, the Pirsha Aruch, the long version, Pirsha Katsa, the short version. And I'm fairly sure he didn't intend for it to be the long and short version, I think. In retrospect, when it came out, that was clear. I don't think he was like, or the long one, like, oh, this is too long, or a short one, maybe people will read it. And both of them ended up in the book. So usually Ibn Ezra is very consistent in his commentary. Very interestingly, here he has two very different approaches, as we'll see. As the Pesach Rashi says, on the top marker, Tachashim, Mincha is Sefer Animal, Vol Haisa El L'Sha'a. Gavim Midrashik, Rashi says, it only existed at the time. Rav Gavan Mahayala, and it was multicolored. L'Kach Matargim Saskuna, Shasas Misper B'Gavun Shala. Okay, as we discussed many times, Rashi quotes Targum very often. I never mentioned this before here, so I'm going to just repeat again. But if you remember, what's the reason why Rashi is so quick to quote Targum? There's one very common sense reason, and one more Midrash reason. Well, give you a Rashi was the earliest commentaries. If you're the first commentaries, what's the basic problem that you have? There's never a quote, you're going to quote. So since the Targum is before, and even the Targum for the most part, the translation, but if you're Rashi, you don't have any address on the page, or it's like I'm across Kedolos, or that's across Kedolos, or it's not Rashi, then you have to use Targum. So you have no choice. That's also, by the way, why even Ezra quotes him very often, and the later you get, the less people quote him. It could also be, there's a whole idea that the Targum, according to Gemara, which is written in Ruach HaKodesh, I mean, question about how literally you should take that, but Rashi probably took that pretty literally, so he might have thought it was from Ruach HaKodesh, then that's quoted. That's more than good. Anyhow, the point being, the way the Targum translates is Saskuna, which for most of us doesn't really make any better, because what does that mean? But Rashi takes it as Shasas, Saskuna, the Samach is really Kasin, it's happy, it was Be'er, and because it's showing off, Yivinu Shalom with colors. So Rashi had the idea of some sort of like a multicolored unicorn that only existed in the town of Mishkan and didn't appear anywhere else. Okay, now surprisingly, Ibn Ezra is not going to go for the magical creature approach. So he goes to Ibn Ezra, he says, Tachashem, Min Chai Hasei Dir Be'mehim, the animal was known at the time. That's interesting, he doesn't say that only was around the time, he says it's well known at the time. So my reading, it's not 100% clear. I don't think Ibn Ezra is saying that. Oh, it's some animal that only popped up in the Mishkan and disappeared. Right, Rashi read it. I think he's saying it was an animal that you have no idea what it is now. But saying if you had the time of Chumash, you wouldn't have needed nothing else. It would be obvious what it was. And it's interesting. He quotes the passage in Yechazkel, which is impressive that he knew enough Yechazkel to rattle it off. I think most of us have never found that. King Kasir Banachat Tachash. It talks from Yechazkel how people have shoes made of Tachash. You have to conclude from that, seems that Tachash was some sort of animal that was well known at the time of Tanakh, we're not exactly sure it is now, but it was some animal that was out there. Now, I'll look at that passage in a second. What's interesting is, look at Ibn Ezra and his Pirsha Katsa, and I'm skipping a big chunk here, please God, we'll get back to it in a second. See the third source of Tachashim, it says, Or Behem Shu'av, it's a skin that's very thick, Ke'na'a Le'sekim Or Ak Or Ashar. Since you know, I'll quote a second from Yechazkel, they use the skin to make shoes. So Ibn Ezra said, you can't use thin leather to make shoes, and you have crummy shoes. Shoes have to be thick. They said, it has to be something thick like an ox. A P.T. shoe shark. I think I'm guessing it's an ox. Because, oh, my God, Tachash, they made shoes out of Tachash. Now, I don't think these two Ibn Ezra really work together so well, because here he's saying, Tachash is an ox. And if anything, I mean, he doesn't exactly translate it here, but I think his point is that Tachash means something thick. So he's basically making it to some very common animal that we even have nowadays, whereas in commentary on Aruch, it sounds like a simple person, we don't know what it is exactly. I don't know if people are having a question. It's not 100% clear contradictory, but I think it's taking twos and takes here. But I think the Aruch makes it sound like, okay, it's not really so mythical, but Rashi's making it, but it's some sort of weird animal, we just don't know what it is. And then all of a sudden the Kaddish is like, no, actually, it's an ox, something very common, and talk about something amazing special, it just means fix you. Okay, in any event, I just want to show the Pasuk in Yechezkel, first of all, because how often we look up Pasukim in Yechezkel, but also be the earlier part of Parak, is actually something very famous we say during the Seder. So if you go to the bottom, so it says Yechezkel Tetzain Vav, the actual Pasuk that he quoted about Artakash, say, Anacha Takash, Mingashir Takash from the last Pasuk, before he quotes, well, he doesn't quote, but we'll quote, it says, Vavar Elach, Vavarich, 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 that's a classic line. I think many people in the Seder say that part out loud. Interestingly, I guess it's nobody started here, but since Harry Davidson started your near recess apparently, I think Sparkman skipped that line, right? I think Sparkman just hit that line about the Mahakidim.
Yes,
it doesn't come up with Mahakidim, and then. There's a famous idea that Hashem saw us that we were wild in our blood, that we're already sinners, should live in your blood. And the way Moshe came through, the crowd is impressed.
We'll take it.
But this is a classic midrashic idea that the Jews were lacking mitzvot at the time of Sitz Mitzrayim, and that Hashem gave us two mitzvot of blood, the blood of the Karban Pesach, they put in the lampos, and Dam Basmila, and that was the blood, so the Demachi should live in your blood, meaning that blood, those mitzvot, to give you a chance to live to be redeemed. Because it's interesting that God actually quotes it out of order. That God quotes Pasuk Zion first, which says, Rebekah Shema Chasadan Tatich, Taviv Tagli, Tavor Badadayim, in the way the marriage takes it, at Ayom Bariyah, which says you're naked, it's because you're naked that you had no mitzvot, you had no merit in order to be redeemed. And then, of course, the passage before, and Bob saying, and you give the blood to redeem you, meaning the Dam Mila and the Dam Karban Pesach. Just parenthetically, the reason where the marriage got that from, the next passage, which says, Revar Elayach, Bereich Benech at Esto De'im, V'efros Karapialach, V'chaseh Abaseh. The way the marriage reads, I said it was age to the end of the time of loving, meaning it was time for God to take us as his nation. But he felt that we have to do something to earn that. It can't just be we get a freebie. It's got to be before we're going to be picked. We have to give us something. And that's where this comes in. Anyway, that's the part that God records. Then the psukim continue in Pasuk Tes, V'chaseh b'mayim, V'chaseh b'mayim, V'chaseh b'mayim, God says that he washed off the blood we were in, V'chaseh b'shemen, and he anointed with oil. V'chaseh b'chma, good fancy clothing, V'chaseh b'chash. As the Pasuk comes in, he gives us the Tachash shoes. This is the other time in Tanakh where Tachash comes in, besides our Tachash and our Pesukim. The other things to say, it's the same animal, which makes sense, between the two of them. And it's interesting for Rashi, Rashi doesn't quote this Pasuk, it's a little unclear how he would deal with it, but if Rashi is going to read Yechezkel, the Midrashic reading, it's all talking about Mitzrayim, this is the same time period, so it wouldn't be a problem for Rashi. In particular, Yechezkel, it's not really clear what they're talking about. If you go to the Midrashic read, that's talking about you see, if you try him, at the same time period as Truma. The Kontrashi, there wouldn't be a problem for him. It would be Anach Tachash. Well, I better give you those Tachash shoes now because next generation, they're going to disappear. If anything, you've got to use Tachash now. It's now or never. That's what was Tachash mean? Just to recap it to Rashi, they did some sort of mythical creature with many colors that like, magically appeared from Mishkan and then disappeared. Your brother says, no, something so crazy, some animal that if we knew the animal at the time of the Chumash, it would make sense. You quote the Pasuk in Yechezkel, that's in Persha Arach. Persha Hakad says, you go a different approach, which is, it's just in Ax, and Tachas seems to me in some respect. Okay, that's a little bit of an aside, just because it's in the same Pasuk, and I thought it was an interesting Machokas Rashi ben Ezra. Much more famous is the Atzei Tikkun, but they use the cedar wood. Okay, Rashi raised the famous question, which is, where do you find cedar wood in the middle of the desert? Yeah, that's weird. None of us are in the desert, but apparently there's no cedar wood there. So Rashi is a very, very famous Medrash. Going back to the top source, Asi Chitim, his mind will have, I'm not sure this should be, but I don't know
what that word is.
I know what it is. The Lamed, sometimes you cut case in Barilah and it throws in random letters, I have no idea why. It should be Lahem, the Lamed is a mistake.
No Lamed.
Yes, I totally agree about that, Mr. Lamed. I know about Bidabar, where they have cedar wood in the desert, the famous of Tehuma, of course, the Medrash. The Kavina Sipa Ruach HaKodesh. Yaakov foresaw Ruach HaKodesh, we need it someday. So the Sidney Israel of Nos Mishra Midbar. He said, someday we're going to build a Mishra Midbar. Vivim Arazim and the Shad Nathan. The very unlikely setup, he brought cedar wood down into Egypt and planted it there. Vestila Banab, you're telling my hand, we command his children someday take it with you. It's like, trust me, you'll thank me someday. It may sound weird now, but it's good advice. So Mr. Rabbi went to Egypt and then eventually immediately later on. So that's why everyone is very famous. What's cool though is even Ezra, not surprisingly, rips this medrash and has a totally different take on it. He goes to even Ezra, he says, this is a picture of Aruch now, on the first line. So I'd say Shittim, where the Shittim would come from. It says, Venenu, Shemur, Shiakabin, Natam. Now, see, this Ibn Ezra, even though the cool part had to do with the Shittim, there's a lot of different kind of meta ideas of how Ibn Ezra deals with Medrash that come up here. One is that even Ibn Ezra often rejects Midrashim, but the Midrashim was so part of his world, he always feels the need to quote them first in order to reject them. In other words, it's not like he's so anti-Medrash that, oh, the Medrash doesn't exist. The Medrash is so important in his world that you have to quote it first. You can't just disregard it. You have to quote it in order to shoot it down. Which, yes, we
get that. You see that
all the time each year. Don't care. I have most of a chumash. Yeah, I'm not lying. I have it all the time. Exactly.
There's also,
yes,
no way.
Okay, well, we can't do private jokes because it's being recorded. Yes. Exactly. Now, it's interesting that I think, even though that's hard to know, but I think there's two different takes that also. One is how prevalent Medrash was in his society. He felt like, how can we not quote it? How can we be Talmud Chacham and not know Medrash? But also, B, as much as even Ezra often will say, oh, the Medrash isn't what really happened, they give another explanation, but I think he's still respected enough that there is some sort of meaning to it. In other words, it's not about even Ezra is like, oh, the Medrash is silly, let me tell you what's really happening. I think his take is that the Medrash is so important, it's giving you some sort of message, but just realize it's not in the Pasuk, so it should be part of the dialogue, but don't think that's what Pasuk actually means. And I think that's what part of the question also. It's hard to know, because even Ezra never gives you like, okay, let me explain to you why I'm quoting what I quote. Like, he quotes you, you've got to figure out for yourself what his methodology is. Okay, so at the point he quotes this medrash, he says, Shalmash Yaakov in Atam, quotes the medrash that Yaakov planted them. So Hatziyam Mishram Mitzvahs Moshe, and the Jews took it out because Moshe said, Yaakov said, someday you'll thank me. And interesting, he quotes a proof here. This proof is not quoted by Rashi. Varaya Vachal Hashem Se Ito. The way the Pasuk says that everybody who happened to have was found with him, almost as if, if you happen to have some cedar wood, so then you'll bring it. How do you happen to have it? Because Yaakov said, but would you? But it's a good thing, unless they happen to have it lying around where they had all the other parts of it. So here's quoting Medrash. Now, this is Mora. This is a very strange Medrash. Loma Nemesh from Seito Sarko. From Seito doesn't mean, because even as they happened to have it, it meant all the other things they had, the gold, the silver, they had it because, for whatever reason, it was the gold and silver. They needed it for jewelry, for.
So the way he reads from Seito, not just they happened to have it, from Seito is
they had it because they needed it. But all the other ones they needed for everything, you went to the gold and silver, but why would you do with cedar wood if you're in the desert? Pretty worthless in the desert. So he doesn't like the idea that the hands are lying around. Okay, so that's not the greatest question.
Wait, can you go over, what's the raya for the medrash?
When America describes all the materials they brought, it says all the materials that Shem tells they were found with them.
So that includes the sheep that he
made? Right. Now you could argue maybe it's just the other materials, but he's saying that seems to be inclusive to all the materials listed. Because if they cheat them, why do they have the SSC lying around? It must be that they knew they were supposed to have it with them. And then he says, but Nimsa doesn't mean they had it, means that they needed it, and that the cheat them were completely worthless other than the Mishkan. Okay, not a great question, but here's a much better question. It says, let's say we accept the Medrash. He says, why do they take it out? Like, what do they think they're going to do with it? That's point one. And then a much better question, the Ode. And Mitzrayim Choshvim, Kizvah Chem Holchem. So this is a much bigger question of, the whole way through, when we keep telling power, we want to leave, keep saying, we're going to go for 3 days and come back. When the Jews finally left, the big question is, did Egypt really think they'll come back in 3 days? Or is that part of the law, okay, Absalom's not coming back, we're down here. Because 3 days later, they don't come back, power gets upset. The whole question is, how do you read that? Do you read it as, he always thought they'd come back after 3 days? But 3 days later, he forgot how miserable he was to the Makos, and all of a sudden, he took a bad idea to send them out, so he found an excuse to go after them. He was reading it as, they always thought they'd just been for 3 days. The question is, why would you be for 3 days, taking the cedar wood that your forefather planted for you 210 years ago, when you suddenly cut it down and take it with you, you're coming back in 3 days? It's very hard to answer the question, because of that is. It says that Baruch HaKeshu is supposed to come back, that's why, according to Ibn Ezra, they were willing to lend their stuff, like they thought they'd get it back. These monsters would crush him, you guys just like sneak it out in a box, oh, nobody realized. It's obvious that you were taking it with you. So why do the Egyptians not wonder about it? They passed by the royal palace, not like they snuck out in the middle of the night. Three brought to keep them with them. And the teacher was asked him, what are you doing? Like, what cover story is this for that? Say, Moshe?
If they're going to sacrifice animals, don't you need something to stoke the fire? Couldn't they just say that's why we have wood?
You mean the monster big cedar wood that has been growing for 210 years? They're just essentially cut down for wood to...
Fair.
I mean, perhaps you could say that, but I'm pretty sure that wouldn't have been so good at all.
Fair.
Yes, it's all about how you frame it, right? Okay, excellent. Very good. Now here, another point, big point of Ibn Ezra is that when even Ezra has a drush he doesn't really like, he'll offer you the following phrase. V'nevei Adanu, m'kabal ha'isa b'arabaseinu sh'mitzvayim ha'tiyam, k'manachna so el mishmatab, saying, if this marriage is a tradition, they said 100% will accept it. That's a major point. Very often even at the court for drush he doesn't like, he doesn't just reject it. He says, oh, look, if it's a tradition, then I'll accept it. If not, then I'll give another explanation. Even within that, there were two ways it could be that. Let me try to the crowd. He says, if it's a Kabbalah and tradition, we'll accept it. You have the more cynical and the less cynical way of reading it. Less cynical is that Yaki meant that some of Drashim are traditions from Sinai, some of Drashim are the Chacham expressing their ideas. And he's saying, I don't know which one this Medrash is. If this Medrash is a Kabbalah for Moshe, then it's accepted. It. If it's not, then I'll question it. That's probably the nice way of reading it. If you're a little more cynical, treat it as, look, I can't just say the Medrash, I don't accept the Medrash because it's a Medrash. So if I say it this way, it sounds okay. I'll say, well, if it's Kabbalah, accept it, but like, obviously not. That's a more cynical way of reading it. But, okay, I guess it depends how I want to take the Ibn Ezra on that one. People are saying, if it's a tradition, I'll accept it, but if not, I'm sorry, but if it's just based on the Chazal come up with their own logic, it's okay, so they'll come up with an alternate way of reading it. But Amar, Kesemach al Sina Yar Asechitim, Ravam Sharam, Omahem Shashem Tekabu Harbeh. He argues that they didn't go straight to the Bar Sina, they stopped along the way. Because one of the places they stopped had no oasis with cedar wood in it. Okay, is it possible for oasis to have cedar wood? I have no idea. But that's just taking it. That happens to be they came across this oasis of cedar wood. In Alem, I'm not just a prophecy. They told up and take it earlier that they needed, didn't have that nana all the time to protect them, so they needed the word protection. So when they sat there, they said, look, we need to build a hut for ourselves. The cedar wood is perfect for a hut. They cut them the cedar wood, use it. They cut down the whole. Basically, there used to be an oasis, and by the time they left, it was a desert after all. Because they cut it all down, there was nothing left. Okay, I'm Rabbi, because you think about it, there's 600,000 people, just the males leaving, and a lot of people, you need a lot of wood to build your houses. And also to slaughter the animals, like most people do that, but I think going with building your houses. But so Sukkos, and they made a temporary hut for themselves. They cut them all this wood to make their huts initially. Then later on, Moshe said, now we need to cheat them for the Mishkan. They had it from that area that was close by. Okay. So why did they have to have it? Because they had used it previously to build their huts. The others take that, not that they took it with them, but they came across it in the desert and used it then. Okay, that idea would be my springboard to go to the other approach of Ibn Ezra. But this first, the Kaskuni, has an interesting take. Let's hear from the crowd. A little bit unclear to me if he's based on Ibn Ezra or different from Ibn Ezra. He says, Simsi ben Ezra, in the desert there was wood that grew, and it was called Shittim. Interestingly, one of the places the Jews dwelt was in Shittim, because the Chaskun is called that because the Shittim wood that was there, which is a very clever tag. Now the question is though, this is unclear to me, is he saying that it was really, I think of course Ibn Ezra is pretty clear that it's cedar wood is very normally translated. The way that the Chaskun is saying is that the place is called Shittim, it's not clear to me, is it that it was an area of a lot of cedar wood, so the area is called like Cedar Lane or something like that, no pun intended. That sounds really lame, but it seems funny in my head. Right. Or is he saying that it's not really cedar wood, it's wood that grew in this place called Shittim, and it's also really big.
The spot of Shittim is at the end when it's in Balak, when they're about to go to Israel. It's nowhere near Mitzrayim, I assume.
Oh, that's an interesting question. That's a good point.
I don't even know if it's listed in
Masay. I heard that. I didn't think about it. That's an excellent point. I would guess, but the point, the question for the answer, I guess the Chassidim would say, based on that, you see this wood grew in the desert. It's not so weird. So it could be that, meaning, right, maybe they didn't get it from the place called Shittim, but I mean, you're saying the same way Shittim was named after the Shittim where the Gruna Desert, maybe there are other areas also that had it. But that's not important. But let's get to the carbon. I think it's a little bit unclear. Is he saying that it's just a word that's name, that has that name because it's in the desert? But anyway, then he goes on to describe the qualities of it. It's kav kalak v'na ahaya. It must be a very light wood. If it kind of surrounds all the time, if you think of cedar wood, where we think of it, this naturally heavy wood, can you imagine kind of always crushing about the desert? That must have been an awful, awful job. He's arguing, it was really big, oh, but it's wonderful, and it was light, it sounds like an infomercial. If you order now, what's wrong with the good tonight? And he's saying, these trees are so amazing, you have to carry them around, even though they're so big, because they were very long, due to the mention of the Mishkan, they were light enough, they could carry them around, it wasn't a big deal. Okay, so Chaskuni, looks like unclear if he's exactly the same as Ibn Ezra, similar to Ibn Ezra. This is about the Shittim part. So basically, where does Shittim come from? Rashi says it was all ordained from Yaakov, and he brought it down with him. The other says, it must have been hard to explain to the Egyptians earlier than what the difference between cedar wood. She said it's got it from the local cedar eateries, as it were, was close by. And the Chaskuni is similar. He just says that the name Shittim came after that. It's a little bit unclear if it's only called Shittim wood because of the area, or it was named after cedar. So this is Ibn Ezra that often in the Midbar, well, I would say often, at least two times in the Midbar, the Jews have supply that you would not have expected to have because they got it from like the local, not as desert-like parts of the desert. I mean, if you really smack in the middle of the desert, there's no cedar wood growing there. I think it's pointed to that before it got really desert-y, there's an area that's more settled, and that's where they got the word from. The Ibn Ezra used that once again for another very, very famous, because take it back, it's famous if you're into the Ibn Ezra. So it's not really that famous, but if you're like a Tanakh geek like me, it's very famous. The Ibn Ezra, he says very famously, as it were, that the Jews did not have cattle in the desert. And we're very used to, because we grew up with Rashi, but like they did, that they had so much cattle that they had cattle that lasted 440 years. So they're going to argue that if you're 60,000 people, no matter how much meat you took out of Egypt, it's going to disappear good and fast. And the parallel I use for this, like, imagine you're in an all-boys school, like CBC, like me and Moshe, and you take that food for chicken, you put it out on the table for the kids. 5 minutes later, it is gone, like not a morsel left. So if you multiply that from 300 kids to 600,000 males, you can imagine how fast meat disappeared good and fast. Because it's going to be, but he goes against himself, it seems to be throughout Chumash that Jews have meat in the desert, so what's up with that? So he's going to be, I won't spoil the end, but you this idea of, when they were near other civilizations, then they bought meat to kind of resupply. That's going to be a similar idea to say, hey, about Tzitzitim. Anyway, that's my token tie-in in terms of Ibn Ezra. Let's get that one now. Ibn Ezra actually discussed it several times in Tanakh, but the biggest discussion is here in Shmuel Perkav Tes. He quotes a parallel from Amos, which he also copied, first of all, because he quotes a parallel, and the one Amos is like the discussion, also be how often you get between Ibn Ezra and Amos. If you get the chance, you got to grab it, because it sounds so smart. Okay, so it says here in Shmos, give me a second here, I'm sorry. Oh, I can tell them that. It says, Allah Tamil Dora Sechem, when Hashem commands them to bring the Karmic Tumid, the big question is the Karmic Tumid something they brought in the desert also? Or is God saying, I'm giving you the command, the Dora Sechem, that you will bring eventually when you get to civilization? Even as reading it as, not that you brought the Karmic Tumid in the Midbar, you will bring it later on. So, Kriba Olos, Rath Hashem Yom in the Bar Sinai. He says the only time they brought the carbon was around Har Sinai. The Os Tamed Har Sinai, which says Os Tamed, which is done in Har Sinai, he was that literally not as we did it initially in Har Sinai, then we continued to bring the Os Tamed. He did it as the Os Tamed, which you only brought in Har Sinai. Because after Har Sinai, you had no more animals, you had no ability to bring the carbon anymore. Can Mishkan Husam Tachsa Harbatia Machane? And I think Kigasa can have all of it. Mr. Chris, yes. I'm sorry. So the fourth line, since I've ever seen the Dach HaSvara, I've just shown you the Lamakimel. The Dach HaSvara, I said, it seems to me, Lo Kavi Yisrael Olos Hizbachim Rak Misin Levado. The only time the Jews brought carbonos, there were animals, was in Har Sinai. In Kippurim, Mishin HaShinit, King Asib, Avad Aaron, the Yaskal Shetzi Vash Mitz Moshe. Can we know from Achreimos, in the second year, they brought animals from Kippur? So he argued, that was the only Yom Kippur they brought carbonos, and they stopped. And what's his proof? His proof is from Amos, I didn't quote the whole parak here. But I'm sure you all know, one of the big themes in the Bima Choronim is that the Jews thought we could be really evil, but if we basically kiss up to God and give him karbanos, then it's all good. We'll give him a big check, and I'll make up for the fact that we're evil the rest of the year. And the constant refrain that God has is, I only want your karbanos if they're based on being good people overall. If it's a substitute for being good people, then your karbanos are really worthless to me. So that comes up all the time. That comes up in the first part. For sure, that's a very common theme. But in Amos, it gets very extreme. He says, did you bring karbanos to me in the Midbar? No, you didn't. And most of us would be like, yeah, we did. So what do you mean by that? The other take on that is, no, we didn't. We only brought it for the first year, and then we stopped. And God's point is that the karbanos aren't the main thing. The karbanos, all 40 of the Midbar didn't have them, and we're fine. The karbanos are supplement to being a good person, to be a good person first, and bring karbanos second. Right? Because he saw all the Midbar Tohu, Yelei Shimon, the Jews in this completely desolate area, Kamo Shimon of Shal Shoshana for 38 years, None of animals, they didn't bring any of this stuff. They didn't have flour, they didn't have wine. They had flour, they used it for their food. They didn't have all the supplies on the ground. So his argument is that they literally did not bring karbanos or anything that was gone for 40 years. They didn't have it. But if you have the amount of wine they would need for 4 years in the desert, that's an awful, and they had to bring it every day, that's an awful, awful lot of wine. Well, twice a day. So if you do the math, it doesn't work out so well. So his argument is that they didn't bring it at all. Now, here's a good example of, to us, this even is very shocking, because we're brought up with the Rashi approach. But I think if you start like a Tanakh, a blank slate, let's say you know any Mepharshim, the even makes a lot more sense. Isn't it much more likely that they didn't have animals for 40 years than they carried around all the time? I mean, how many animals really needed to supply those cabanos? It's kind of hard to imagine.
Right. It says...
Okay, how can they possibly have two animals for every single day for Korban Tamid? So for Shabbos Mardim, and then you add on more Shabbos Mardim, it's a lot of animals. And before he goes on to the question himself, so the point he doesn't quote here, but I think it's really brilliant for him. When the Jews complain about food, what are the two main food groups they complain about? First they get, what's the main food they get? What? Water, meat, well, food in general, right. So water is the constant complaint, correct? Then they ask, we don't have any food, we get the mud. We don't have any meat, we get the slob. Now, Rashi's reading on that was not a fair complaint because they had plenty of meat, they just argue and get to argue. The Ibn Ezra says, no, the reason they're arguing for meat is because they didn't have any meat. Once they were in the desert, the meat was gone, so it's nice to get the mud, but I could only eat so much mud before you went to a nice sticky sandwich. If you're younger than us, you can still do that.
Like young over.
So according to the other, it makes sense. Well, why are they arguing for the meat? Because they didn't have it. Okay, then he said a very good question himself, and this is where it ties into the Pius Ibn Ezra. The problem is, if the Hebrew is going to argue they didn't have any cattle, so then right before they enter Israel, there's a whole story of the two and a half Shvatim. And what did two and a half Shvatim say? We want to stay here because, what was the time there? We have a lot of cattle, so it seems to have a lot of cattle. Right, Rashi actually quotes out the proof, where Rashi trying to suggest that there was plenty of meat in the desert. He says, well, you see that, here Trump's saying, we have so much time, we want to stay here. Ibn Ezra really, that's upon himself, where the cattle come from. So he has two takes on that. One of them is tied into what we said previously. He says, Kippa Kadecha, yep, Vashem Yishuv Kanu. So Pusi argues, when did they say that? Only at the end of the 40 years, when they're about to enter Israel.
They still
captured the Emoli. So he gets to that in a second, but first, that's the second one, hold on, let's figure it out. His first idea is that they're no longer in the desert, they're now re-entering civilization. So saying, so where did they get the cattle from? They bought it. They came back to civilization, the first thing they did was like, where's the meat? And they came, they bought all that they could. So that to me is, I think, very parallel to the Ibn Ezra beforehand with the Hashitim, that we think of the desert as being totally this awful place where they're going around like, water, water, like we're burning sun, and they have on the Lawrence of Arabia hats. But the Ibn Ezra arguing that both before they started and after they finished, they started in a more civilized area and they got more and more desert like they went along. So initially they have to get the cedar wood, and at the end they have to get the cattle. Because that was a token tie into the previous Ibn Ezra, but I think it's a very similar idea. And he argues, like Moshe is saying, and also, they just conquered Sichon and Og, so all of a sudden they had all the spoils. So first he says maybe they bought it from the local meat market, or he says, or maybe they just took it after they conquered the nations. Right. So all of a sudden, now they have a lot of cattle, but not because they have a lot of cattle for all 40 years, it was recently in the final last year in the desert, all of a sudden now, stories led up to them having a lot of cattle. Okay, nice. Because that's just relevant to the whatever they are. I just look at the parallel Ibn Ezra and Amos. He says, I think I heard from the beginning. They did a carbon tumid in Hatzinah for 50 days. I mean, the pasuk in Amos, the one we quoted before, we said, you didn't do a carbon for me 40 years in the desert, because you mean you didn't. Now, the other way, that's to be entirely honest, the other way we got pasuk, not that you didn't bring carbon for 40 years, but his point was the carbon the main thing I wanted in the desert? No. For me, the carbon in the desert is a supplement to you being good people. Meaning, the way the Hebrew desert reading is literally, you really, I did not bring carbon for 40 years. But the other way of reading is that you obviously brought Kabbalah, but God's saying, is that really what I care about? No, it's not really what I care about. Okay? So now that pasuk says, the way we're going to do this, it's the exact same even Ezra on Shmos, but he saw the Yishuv, because the Jews had just, were still in the area of civilization. This is slightly different. I mean, originally he made it sound like they took enough animals with them initially to last through the first round of Kabbalah. But now he's saying something more similar to that. He keeps the argument, the first of Egypt, the first area is more settled, to be able to keep resupplying their meat as they went along, they go to buy it. The further into the desert they got, the more they had nothing and couldn't bring it anymore. Okay? Okay, this is all very repetitive, so let's skip all of it. Let's skip now to the third line, the last word. It says, but then after they left Midbar Sinai, they went to the desert, all for the area was no grazing for animals. Then they didn't have any wine. Until finally last year, exactly the 7th Shmos, the 40th year after they conquered the Amorim, the Midianim, all of a sudden they had supplies again. The Kachavah, Kaddish, B'Yeshuv, B'Shin HaMem, Shal Midianim, B'Kan Behemos. The combination of some taking spoils, some buying, you put two together, you got plenty of animals. B'Niyah Dechasfar, Alot Kribu, saying, even though saying, logically, it seems they did not put Kabbarnas all 40 years in the desert. Let's skip ahead a bit. Right, B'nai Tam, so what does the pasuk Amos mean? Kashar alachti eschem b'midbar shanim rabos, all those years you're in the desert, lake ashmi olos, you didn't bring any karbanos, v'akzi v'si eschem l'shosh mishpat. Right, you didn't bring karbanos, I just said, do just be good people, and that was fine. I think the same thing over here, that shows, what do I say, I really care about, I really care about justice. So you people now, don't be evil and think you can bring karbanos to make up for it. Be good people, that's more important than bring karbanos afterwards. Right. These are all the quotes from that psukim. And Amma says, God says, I want chesed, I want kindness, I don't want karban. Not that I said I want karbanos, but saying, I don't want karbanos as it's instead of chesed. Chesed is a more important thing. If you're good people, then by all means, bring karbanos. But don't think the karbanos can be your way, you get a jail free card, and then you just do your evil rest of the time. He quotes the person in Yehu, which at first glance sounds like a good proof for him, but I think actually not so compelling. Chabir Yehu Omer, Chlezi Barat, Tvaseichem, Lesidisem, Adabi, all the Zadah. Says in Yirmiyah, I think it's Perek Zion, I never commanded you to bring karbanos in the Midbar. Because even what does that mean? Say, because you didn't have any animals to bring. And wasn't that really such a good proof? Because the pasuk sounds like it's even more extreme. It sounds like it's saying, not that you technically couldn't bring it, but I never even asked for it. But that's not true. He did ask for karbanos. We were karbanos the whole time we had the Bar Sinai. We had the first Yom Kippur. I mean, even at this point, it's not that God didn't want us from Kabbalah. He wanted us to, but we just couldn't do it. We didn't have any animals. Right? So I think the Pasuk in Amos is saying, did you bring Kabbalah to me 40 years? As a good proof for him, because saying, you didn't, because you couldn't. Pasuk in Yirmiyah is saying something different. The Pasuk in Yirmiyah is saying, I never commanded you to bring it. I don't, even though he's calling it a proof, I don't think it's such a good proof, because according to him, it's not that God didn't command us. He did. We just technically couldn't do it. That Pasuk sounds more like, in principle, God saying, no Kabbalah, I don't hear about it, it's the Midbar. I don't think it's as good a proof of the Sabbath at first. Just parenthetically, the word Dak in the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu brings in the famous idea of the Rambam, where it's lived with. The Rambam says in Mor Nebuchim, the Kabbalah is really just a bidyavid. That really, ideally, we should just serve God without any sort of like physical having to sacrifice. But because the Jews are so entrenched with Avodah Zarah at the time of Egypt, God thought, you can't just do a 180. You can't just go from, ooh, we're doing Avodah Zarah, ooh, now we're philosophers, we'd Aristotle all day. That's a big turnover. You felt like how to kind of weave them slowly. The Kabbalists were almost like the middlemen, as it were, of really, Kabbalists aren't ideal, but if you do Kabbalists to me instead of to Avodah Zarah, it's not kind of wean you off of the Avodah Zarah idea, you can eventually get to the ideal of no Kabbalists at all. So that, the redacted in this pasuk, I think actually a good reading of the pasuk. I mean, you can't say Hashem didn't command to bring Kabbalists, he obviously did, it's all over Chumash. The reading is that it was never meant to be the primary goal, it was always meant as sort of the dieved. And therefore, don't think that could be your primary thing in the place of being good people. Make sense? Okay, right, let's finish it up. And then, right. Oh, no, that's a quote from us. So just, sum this up, and that'll be time for Marav. So the carryover between the two is that in the one Ibn Ezra about the Al-Sitri, he said, this had it in the civilized deer that's close by, and they bought it, and that's where they got it from. And a similar idea he uses also for the animals. His overall famous idea is that Jews are not animals in the desert. That's what the book about initially. But when you get animals at the end, it says either they have the spoils from Og and Sichon, or they bought it. Same idea of you're in civilization as you leave and produce the desert as you cedar wood. You're in civilization going back to Israel, and then you get your animals from in order to have Mikirah for the Tirah Shatim. Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks for coming. How do I do myself?
Bottom right, maybe. But in the middle.